Before we get started with this episode, I want to talk about the Texas Woodworking Festival happening on September 4th, 2021. If you're anywhere near Texas, you need to be checking this out. So what is the Texas Woodworking Festival? Well, it can be best described as a mix of a beer festival and a woodworking-themed farmer's market. They're bringing together local woodworking organizations, content creators, furniture makers, and tool manufacturers for a day of food, drinks, and all things woodworking. Please visit TexasWoodworkingFestival.com. There you'll find information about tickets, additional information about the schedule, and all the exhibitors and vendors. Look forward to seeing you there. Hi, and welcome to the 361st episode of the MWA podcast. I'm Kyle Barton. I'm here with my co-hosts, Sean Wisniewski and Mark Hicks. Today, we're asking Evan Birding the five questions. And if you want to hear more about Evan, be sure to check out his interview on episode 360. So welcome back to the show, Evan.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Oh, not a problem. Not a problem. Well, before we get started with the five questions, I think we have a Patreon shout out.
So yes, Mark. We want to say a big thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. And today, an especially big thank you to Scott Wisniewski.
Hey,
that name sounds familiar. Is that a relative,
Sean? That's my dad.
That's your dad. Hey, I can't say that my dad supports this podcast other than, like, you know, helping bring me into the world. That's pretty much his
goal. Sounds like there's potential there, though.
Yeah.
You know what? I should tell him. You know, I know you have no interest in woodworking anymore, but you should listen to this woodworking podcast that I do.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm his kid, he'll take an interest. We'll see. But if you are not our parent, or if you are, and you would like to support our podcast, you can go to Patreon. It's patreon.com/MWA podcast, and you can sign up for a few perks. I think we've got like stickers and T-shirts, things like that. Yep. Give us some cash to upgrade our technology, or maybe attend some shows and report back to you.
So fantastic. So thanks again, Scott, Sean's dad. So anyway, well, let's move on to the five questions. Mark, you're the first up.
Well, I am going to start out with how did you get into woodworking?
Well, I don't know how much I'm allowed to repeat from our previous episode, but the short story or version, I guess, started working with my hands in a landscaping job doing stonework, and kind of liked that, but didn't want to be working outside, and thought furniture might be a more, I don't know, warm in the winter.
Well,
it's not, but I thought it might be.
Yeah, I know you mentioned in our last episode that your parents had bought some pieces from local builders in your house growing up, and that perked your interest somewhat as a child. Was there anybody, relatives or anybody in your family that was doing woodworking or similar types of crafts?
No, not really. I think my dad, he is a big gardener still, and so there was kind of like those sorts of projects. And, you know, sometimes get wrangled into those, but I really don't have any sort of charming, you know, my grandfather took me under his wing and showed me how to, you know, use a chisel or anything. I feel out of place, but somebody in my family, I mean, I know my dad has told me, but I think one of his sisters, I think they have like an uncle, so maybe my great uncle or great great uncle was actually like a professional cabinet maker in Cincinnati way back in the day. And I think somebody has his like a tool bench, or excuse me, a workbench that he built for one of the grandkids, and that is at my parents' house. It's got a little tail lights and everything. Yeah. I didn't know that until I was already invested. So. maybe it's in the genes, but not really. I think there was the appreciation, or there was for sure.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a shop.
It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, but the most common answer is, well, I had some fixer upper projects to do around the house, and I bought a table saw and off I went. Is that the most common thread?
Yeah,
handyman projects.
So.
Yeah.
Is there any of that?
Probably more commonly, well, when we got together and we got our first house, I needed to make something.
Furniture.
Yeah. I mean, the sexy story is, like my great-great-grandfather was this and that blood is this. And it's just not for everybody.
Yeah, and you should see the house full of beautiful furniture I could have if I hadn't bought those tools.
and started a business making tools.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Right.
See all the chair parts that are sitting around in my...
Yeah. Exactly. So, so Evan, so what's your favorite tool?
Oh, man.
Can be like your favorite tool right now.
Yeah, I was going to say it does kind of it can kind of shift around depending on what I'm doing. I guess I'm tempted to say a spoke shave, but basically anytime I pull out a spoke shave, I've also typically done a lot of the heavier hacking off with a draw knife. I really love using a draw knife. So they're not the same, but they're kind of, I use them, you know, on the same sorts of work. So those, I'll say the draw knife just to be a little different, because I think it's often thought of as just a green woodworking tool, but I use it a lot in shaping. Just a big wide chisel.
It's the coarse of the coarse medium fine planing method, right?
I mean, exactly.
They do, those two things play in concert with each other, but I mean,
yeah,
they're both fun.
They are. And honestly, it's way more efficient. It's funny. I'll see, things on Instagram where people are like doing a round over on a corner of a table or something. And they're doing it with, you know, the finest shaving, and they speed it up, and it looks like they went over it like 17,000 times. It's like, just, you could literally do that with a chisel, or you can take a draw knife, which is a chisel, just two handled, and be done with that in like two swipes. And then you get to pull out the little fine tool. But, it's like, I don't know. I've tried to like liken it to some, it's like if you had to, you know, process a cup of cheese, you know, you can grate it or you can just cut off a block and have, you know, that much cheese. And it's like, you can do it with sandpaper. You could do it with a rasp. You do it with a hand plane. You can do it with a chisel. It's just how willing are you to just go to your mark and, and lop it off.
Mm-hmm.
Get it done.
How confident are you in lopping it off to not go too far?
Exactly.
Yeah.
There is certainly some nuance there.
Sure.
Yeah.
The workmanship of risk.
Exactly.
Right. Because draw knives have some risk built into them.
But they also they also have some you know, there's a learning curve there, but once you're experienced with one, you can take fine or thick. And and then, you know, you see some chair makers and they will just fly through stuff and you'll hear this cracking and all this stuff. And you think, oh, man, but nope, knows exactly what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. They did that on purpose. It also goes against the Boy Scout rule of never cutting towards you.
Right.
Yeah, but just try to cut yourself with a draw knife when you're holding it by both hands. In a chest, anyways. It's really hard.
No,
don't really, dear listener, don't try. Please. Yeah. But yes.
Well, don't say I told you. You can do it. Just don't blame it on me.
The most dangerous thing you can do with a draw knife is sharpen it.
Probably, because that's the only time that you're actually handling the blade.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you've got it safely to the sides. Right.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So, who has influenced you the most?
That's a good question.
Having gone to the North Bennett Street
School
and all of the other things, that could be a complicated answer.
It is, as I say, I kind of jump to exactly two, like, in a design sense or in the like making sense. But honestly, I do think that, I look at a lot of old work, but all those, you know, all those guys are dead. So, or most of them are. But I think I would probably say Steve Brown one of my instructors at school. They were all really great in like different ways, which I think was a lot of the strength of that program, is that they have, you know, four instructors, and you're kind of getting a variety of approaches. But Steve's approach, and he retired the last year, so if you missed him, I apologize. but he was very, he just had a way about breaking a process down and kind of like, I know that it frustrated people, you know, to kind of our earlier point of like, I didn't grow up doing this stuff. I have it like an understanding of it, and I had an understanding of it before going to school, but he really kind of took that a lot further in, you know, why it's done like this, what are the, you know, what you have to anticipate, how this affects this sort of thing, and not in an academic like sterile way, but in a really kind of a logical thinking through the process, where there was another one of my favorite instructors. I mean, they're all amazing, but Lance Patterson, who's kind of legendary, he's been there since the late 70s teaching, and he looks like he's been there since the 1870s teaching, but he's incredible. But there is almost something like it's almost like he's a savant with this sort of stuff, that sometimes he'd be like, well, you just do it. Like, you know, the answer was the explanation for the novice's eyes was he couldn't see it in the same way that we were seeing it. Mm-hmm.
The curse of knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. He was really good for a lot of things, but like when it came sometimes to like, I really need to understand, and this is kind of maybe how I approach it, but like, I want to understand the what's and the how's and all this sort of stuff so I can, you know, expand them. But Steve was really great at that. And we'd also, over the summer, I remember throwing the Frisbee with him, kicking a ball. He was just an all around great dude. Good sense of humor too. Yeah, enjoyed him.
Very cool.
What has been your biggest stumbling block or challenge in woodworking?
I guess it's kind of the classic, like I was gonna say the business side is like challenging. I think I can like handle more or less the, you know, the paperwork side of it, but honestly, it is the reality of kind of like your, I mean, not timelines, but you know, you give an estimate for, all right, I'll, you know, I've got this much work ahead of me. You look at the queue and say it'll probably be about 6 months, but just kind of understanding that you say these things and people start holding you to them, or they just expect it, and you can't always work as fast as you can work when you're going top speed, because you know you're also living a life ideally. That sort of like I feel like I have a lot of self-imposed stress of crap, I'm already, you know, I'm a month behind on when I said there was this, and then that means the one behind it is going to probably be later because this just turned into a lot bigger of a project. And so kind of trying to navigate the client sort of expectation of timelines and reality. And then kind of part and parcel to that is when I'm in the middle of a project, you know, I'll see something, I'll be like, I could probably go back two steps and change this and make it a little bit better. And it's really hard not to want to do that. And nothing like, and not like restructuring the whole thing, but it's like, oh, I could, this little detail would be a little bit better or whatever. And not, basically just not allowing myself to do that. That's kind of harder than I would have expected it to be.
What is how do you deal with, when you see yourself getting behind, you know, what do you typically do? To manage your customers.
Work, I mean,
you don't reach out and tell them, hey, it's going to be, you know, this is what's happening.
I embarrassingly enough, not always.
Okay.
And it's like one of those things where I will say in my head, I'm like, I should just send out an email, like a mass email to everybody in the queue, and just kind of give a general, like last year, like this year, you know, I've just been slower. I've been less efficient. It's pandemic, you know, maybe there's that stress, whatever it is. And some projects got, you know, what was a desk on paper in the queue turned into like this epic desk that, you know, is a desk, but it took me
office suite.
Twice. Exactly. It took me twice as long because I didn't know that this is what it was going to be. And kind of like, you know, throwing it out as I haven't forgotten any of you. I'm one person and I promise I am working 6 days a week. But I don't know why. I just didn't do that a couple of times that I felt like it. And I, you know, I'll have people will get in touch. And, you know, I obviously kind of manage and explain. And nobody, I haven't had anybody like pull out in any of those situations. I do think I have a pretty good rapport with the majority of my clients. Because more or less before anybody gets into the queue, there's, you know, meetings or phone conversations or a lot of emails that kind of lay a relationship foundation. And I'm kind of sussing them out as much as they are me. So, yeah, but there's definitely, I acknowledge a lack of professionalism in that, just being upfront with, and there has been. It's something I'm aware of, and I am going to do better with going forward. But just owning it and being like, I'm behind.
Mm-hmm. It's a hard phone call to make. I know I've been there, and I always wonder, does somebody else have a better, lower stress way of dealing with this problem?
Yeah.
I mean,
I have the exact same problems, especially recently. You know, it's been hard to get stuff in, or, you know,
right. It's
taken longer. So, yeah,
I had to send out
one of those emails earlier this week saying, hey, I'm still waiting on stuff, you know, I'm still waiting on materials to come in.
Yeah, it's nice when you can blame it on the supply chain.
Exactly. You do that so many times and it starts to feel disingenuous, even though it's the truth. And those people aren't. I feel like in my head, I always go to the worst place. And I feel like these people are tapping their foot, staring at that empty space where this piece of furniture is supposed to go.
Right.
And most of the time, they're just kind of like, I wonder. What's the story on the furniture, you know, like, or the workbench or most of the time they're very understanding, but
totally.
I don't see that in my mind. I see them pissed off and agitated so I'm always curious to see how other people see those things.
Yeah. And the responses I get back, usually I don't get a response, but if I do get a response, it's usually, hey, thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, because
I guess most people don't, you know.
Yeah.
No, it's 100%. It's the right thing to do, and I do think that I appreciate that. You know, on the handful of times it's been the reverse sort of situation. Because this isn't your heart surgery surgeon who's kind of like, oh yeah, I meant to get back to you again. So just that kind of. That degree of professionalism, I think, speaks volumes for people who are, you know, giving us good money for this work. So,
don't be too hard on yourself.
I'm
sure you're better than you think you are.
Yeah, well, hopefully, but it is. I mean, it's very. I think just hitting it like you do, Kyle. Just. Going out and being upfront is 100% the right way to do it. I knew it. I just haven't done it yet. But yeah, always room for growth.
Absolutely. So, how has the internet influenced your work?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. So my website, I think, has definitely brought me work from places I would never have gotten jobs.
There you go.
So that's like an obvious positive. I think Instagram has its merits, and because that's the only other like internet presence, I guess, that I feel connected to. I don't have a YouTube or anything. And that's, I don't know, that can sometimes be, it's kind of like a like going to a show where it's, you know, some part like it lifts your energy and your spirits because you're getting like feedback and you're seeing what other people are doing and you're having that sort of like communal interaction, which is, I think, you know, I benefit from sometimes. And then sometimes it can be like really draining, just with the nature of what social media is and how it's not, it's hard not to kind of be like comparing yourself or seeing your own work through other people's eyes, and that, which is totally wrong, but it's just, it's how it makes our brains work. So that's, I don't know. I think I kind of go in waves with Instagram where I'll be like, oh, okay, cool. I'm like, I'm in the mood for this and I'm happy to like, you know, text with people or whatever that is, and post more. And sometimes I'm just like, I don't really feel like thinking about this. So I don't know. That's not really an influence, but it's kind of, it takes up headspace sometimes that I don't feel like it deserves.
But it is, but I mean, it is kind of a double-edged sword, right?
Totally.
Like, yeah, you know, you get deeper outreach, but also more criticism or time suck or, you know, call it what you will.
Yeah, and more, Instagram wants you to pay to reach your own audience, and that's, it's, the edges are getting unbalanced, I would say.
Interesting.
I didn't even know that.
Well, you just don't, the organic reach is not there anymore. They don't, the algorithm filters you out unless you please it. And, you know, the, where you used to get a few thousand people responding to a post, now it's a few hundred. But you can boost it, you know, if you want to advertise, you can pay to get back in front of the people who already decided they wanted to see you. So it's a little frustrating.
That's weird.
It's a new frustration. I've felt the exact same things you have felt with the comparison and, you know, sort of the looking back at yourself from the outside, but now I'm frustrated with being able to talk to the people that I want to talk to.
Yeah, that is right. That's just kind of one of those, this is, it's here so that we have this, you know, you can find whatever, like-minded people or people who are interested in the same stuff or whatever, however you want to call it. And if they want to put those barriers up and charge you for it, that's just kind of like, well, what's the point? Something else will crop up and that'll be fun for a while, and then it'll
get frustrating,
its own way.
Yeah, because what is Instagram now? It's like every fourth post is an ad or something like that.
We are the product. We are
right.
We're creating their content for them, and their job is to sell ads on it. So I mean, that's the business model.
I mean, they're doing great business wise, but it's it is frustrating.
I guess maybe in a way that, like, because the other side of the Instagram weirdness is, and it's probably, or it's very directly linked to, you know, how it kind of makes you start to look at yourself in a weird way, like in that critical, like, from I is that I find myself doing that when I see, you know, people doing really derivative work or shoddy work, but it's like, this person has, you know, 7 million followers or something. It's like, it literally does not affect my work or my business or anything at all. But there is that sort of like, how come this or that? And then it's also like, I feel like I'm seeing the same sort of work over and over, but if it's, maybe it is the algorithm or the people who want to pay or the whatever. So it's like, okay, good. Maybe there is this good work out there. It's just impossible to find because Mark Zuckerberg wants more money.
Well, it's not out there because those people are too busy making it. They don't. They don't have time to post it, and they're not like Dave Fisher, not on Instagram. You know.
Right. So,
That's exactly right. It's a thing, but yeah, I'm waiting for the next Instagram. At least something that'll be. You know, unique and more more community or oriented, like Instagram right. used to be. And working, it'll I'm run for about a couple of years, and then they'll monetize that.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, somebody they keep trying, and, you know, build a better mousetrap. They'll find a new way of doing the same thing over again. And
the way to do it is to pay for it as a user.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is no need for ads.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the attention is on purpose.
Yep, you are paying, you know, the software is the product, not the people using it.
So, right.
Yeah, but that's hard to convince people to do. The network effect isn't as strong. Yeah. So.
Yeah, right. There's going to be the immediate, well, I can get a similar thing somewhere else. Why would I pay?
And it's free. And yeah.
Right, exactly.
Sort of.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, yeah. No, your point is valid, but it's a more subtle payment that most people aren't going to necessarily recognize.
Yeah.
All righty. Well,
yeah, for the derailing.
I know another business idea.
Oh, no. Yeah, exactly. Somebody out there, figure it out. And
I'm already working on it. It's you know, it's okay. Behind the
all
scenes.
All
right. Oh, okay. Oh.
We're all here, Mark.
You're first. Yes. Yes. Mark's Graham.
Maybe not that.
Ring.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, with that. With that, let's see where people can find you on the internet should they wish to interact.
Yeah, that's right. You can be one of the 14 people who follow me on Instagram. just kidding. I like the people that I interact with on Instagram. They're under just Evan Birding.
Mm-hmm.
And my website is evanbirding.com.
Fantastic. Mark, what about yourself?
My website is plate11.com. My Instagram is at markbuildsit, and I have a YouTube channel under plate11 woodworking. Sean or Kyle, where can we find you?
You can find me at barton.kyle on the dreaded Instagram. And you can also find me on YouTube. Just search for Kyle Barton, and you can be one of my 14 followers on there. Well, you'd be 15, I guess. But anyway, so Sean, what about you?
I'm SeanW78 on most places, including, you know, you could be one of my 14 followers on Instagram.
I think I am.
Yeah, I think you are. You very well could be.
Yeah, Mark's still undecided.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.